Hello, this is Brian Wampler with another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast, the podcast about guitars, amps, effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions. Joining me today again is Blake Weiland from the podcast called The Tone Mob and Richard Oliver from Wampler, among other companies, but Wampler as well.
Mainly Wampler. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Blake?
I'm just wondering why I forgot to bring my coffee out here right now, actually. That's what I'm wondering. But, you know, hanging in there.
I have coffee. I need coffee. I don't have coffee.
I'll get it later. It'll be fine.
So I'm trying to figure out, we had a conversation before this, and I'm trying to figure out if who's going to be the first to get us back in that conversation.
Not me.
Brian has discovered a new filter on Snapchat, which he sent me a picture of himself saying it was a Disney type filter.
It does. It makes you into a Disney character.
I think it makes you look like a sex robot. I've said it in the cleanest way possible, Brian. I can't be sued except maybe Disney.
It is what it is. I mean, I never thought of myself that way. I can understand how someone would look at me and think, the guy should be a sex robot. I can understand that, you know. I mean, I am pretty handsome, you know. I think it's mostly the hairline that makes it. That's the big part of it.
It's the shoes.
Would it be true bypass? Or would it have a buffer?
I think most would hope it would have both true bypass and buffering.
Switchable. I like it.
Look at those arms. They're definitely buffered.
Oh, yeah, there's something. Mm-hmm. Look like a hairy bear. I need to shave some of that crap off. Like I got a fur coat on.
Winter's coming. You got to leave it on there.
I suppose so.
It gets cold there in Indiana.
It does get cold. It does. So tell me about this Chance the Rapper thing you were telling me about.
Yeah, so, I mean, Brian, you and I talk about, like, business stuff all the time, and that's becoming more and more of like a focus of mine as I, you know, am experimenting with the texting thing and, you know, talking with my buddy Devon about like helping him in 2021. So I've been paying really close attention to just music business in general, not just gear world stuff. And Chance the Rapper, for people who aren't aware, because I imagine we got a bunch of rockers listening to this podcast, most likely, he is a very, very successful rapper, and he mostly came up by himself. He's independent, or he was independent. I think he may have signed with somebody at this point, but he got famous independently through the internet and through pumping out a ton of stuff on SoundCloud, and, you know, he just really used the internet to build his fan base, and he became very well known for that, which I think is very cool, and I think more people should try to focus on, but that's not really the point. The point is his manager is suing, or his former manager is suing him for several million dollars because he feels that he is owed this based upon an oral agreement that they had between each other. And, you know, it's kind of funny because it sounds silly to some people. Like, if you're going to pursue a career of that nature or anything, really, it's not the best idea to have a long, long, long-term thing be just strictly based upon an oral agreement. You know, it can actually, in my experience, it can ruin friendships in some ways, and that's the way I view it. I have some established business relationships with outside entities, and, you know, we sat down for several hours to hash out the details of the contract and make sure that we all understood where each other was at with it before we signed anything, because it can actually, like I said, save relationships and save friendships and save, you know, business partnerships when the details are all outlined already. And it was kind of astonishing to me to see somebody at that level of success have that be the case. You know, and I know you want to trust your friends, but that's not really what it's about. We've seen it time and time again that people can, you know, well, you said this, and it's like, well, that's not exactly what I said, you know, like, and there's a misinterpretation, especially when it happened years and years ago, and to see it come to a head here is pretty interesting. But I think it's a good reminder that, you know, when you start taking things really seriously the way they did, time to get some pen to paper, you know?
Yeah, I think at that, once you get to a certain level, I think you kind of have to put it in some form of contract. I mean, I would think both parties would want that.
I'm not sure reading the article that he's learned a lesson here, though, because it seems that his new manager is his dad. And that sounds like that's going to make things really complicated. It looks like his dad's offered a settlement of $350,000 to settle it versus the $3 million he's being sued for by his previous manager, who was known as Pat the Manager. That's a great name.
It is. Chance the Rapper and Pat the Manager.
But yeah, what a mess. What an absolute
mess. Can I call myself
mess.
Brian the Guitar Player from now on?
No.
Is that going to work? No?
No.
Oh. Richard's vetoing that. No,
it's better than Brian the Sex Doll, though, let's be clear.
Well, it depends on what side of the sex doll you're on, I suppose.
I am not going to go any further with this conversation.
This is too much.
And that's when Blake dropped out.
Later.
No, I mean, look, you make a good point. Obviously, if you're doing serious business, and we're talking, you know, millions of dollars, if you haven't got a contract, that's on you. That really is on you. You ain't going to get anything out of the courts here. That said, I'm not sure what the American justice system will do with this. You guys have a better idea than I do, for sure.
I think it's going to be really difficult for, I mean, this, I'm not a lawyer, I don't know, but based on what little I do know about this stuff, I think it's going to be really difficult for our boy Pat to get anything, even if there was a like really firm oral agreement. I suppose if there was a pattern of compensation established, like if he could go back and be like, well, he paid me this much here, he paid me this much here, and then he stopped for some reason, maybe he might have a leg to stand on there. But then again, if there's nothing written or, you know, recorded where it says, hey, we're going to pay you this much percent over this period of time, then I think it's going to be really difficult for him to get what he wants. Again, unless there's a pattern, you know, he might have some wiggle room there. But, you know, without knowing the particulars, it sounds like Pat's probably out of luck on this one.
I think problems like that are probably common in industries where it's mostly made up of artists. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess I'm thinking of people I know that have started, you know, bands or pedal companies or anything like that. And they're like, we're good friends and we both play music together. We should start a company together. Mm-hmm. And that's not usually why you want to pick business partners, because you're good friends. That's really not. Usually you want to pick someone who has values and skills that you don't have. Well, mostly, I guess, skills, not necessarily values, but
values. No, values would be important, actually, to avoid these kind of situations.
I mean, it could be. It could also go the other way. I want someone who values ripping people off. That's probably not the best in a business partner. But, you know, I mean, like, take me, for example. I have ruggedly good looks, you know. Mm-hmm. That's why I, you know, Richard and I work together quite a bit, because
that's not the reason.
Kind of offsets. Oh, it's not.
That's not the reason.
No, oh. No,
we work together because I don't like to rip people off, and I stop you from, you know, veering to the dark side.
Oh, not true at all.
I mean, I don't think there's any precedent.
Richard's the one who's like, we don't need more overdrives, Brian. Stop with the overdrives.
No, I want more overdrives. In fact, I've got an idea today from one of our artists that I need to run past you, because I like the idea a lot. So, yeah, more overdrives, definitely. Going back to the chancing, I don't think there's... Can anyone think of any precedent in law where this has happened before in the entertainment business? Because this sounds like this must be a common thing, but I quick Google doesn't find anything, so...
I can't
Kelly
think of
Clarkson
anything off the...
sued by management firm for unpaid commissions. That's the only thing I've come up with so far.
I can't think of any specifics off the top of my head, but it's a kind of a classic tale in the music industry of the manager, you know, taking advantage of the artist. I mean, clear back to the Colonel and Elvis, you know, like everybody kind of knows that story where, you know, that guy prevented Elvis from I mean, Elvis was doing fine financially. Let's not sugarcoat it. But he would have done even finer. But he couldn't. He couldn't leave the U.S. because his manager could not leave the U.S. because he would not be allowed back in. So there's like there's all these kinds of things where artists just seem to typically kind of ignore the business side of things.
There's a really brilliant case. It's slightly different, but are you familiar with Ian Brown? Used to be the singer of the Stone Roses.
I know of the band, but I don't know him.
He released a song called Bittersweet Symphony, which was a massive song. And up until, I think, last year, he didn't get any royalties from it because they used a clip of a orchestral version of a Rolling Stones song. And although I think the Rolling Stones actually cleared it, the person who owned that orchestral clip said no and took every bit of profit from that song. And I think it was only last year that it all reverted back to Ian or whatever. And I find music law fascinating because it does seem to be just full of really, really bad commercial decisions, right? Mm-hmm. You know, ripping people off and not knowing that you're doing it is never going to make you rich. And it happens all the time, I'm sure. But... it's a whole minefield. I'd love to actually like get deep with a music lawyer. I think that would be a really interesting conversation.
There's probably thousands of cases that we just never really hear about that are, you know, maybe smaller time artists or things that settle out of court, et cetera, that we just don't know. But I think the main thrust of the whole thing is artists need to do it. I would have thought that this would have been less of an issue now. Like, that's why I was really shocked that Chance was having this issue. What? It's 2020. What's going on here?
It was the Verve, not the Stone Roses. I'm an idiot.
Okay.
Oh, I'm familiar with the Verve. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not the Stone Risers.
Yeah, no.
Not familiar with them.
Everybody in England is laughing at me right now, and I hope you cut that bit out.
No. If you're keeping Brian the sex doll pit part in, that part's got to stay in.
It wasn't Ian Brown. It was Richard Ashcroft and The Verve. I completely got my long-haired indie rockers the wrong way around. I'm obviously not a great fan of either. But yeah, basically the story is exactly that.
Neither one's David Gilmour, so they don't even matter.
Right. There we go. Now we're back on to something that I can talk authoritatively about.
If it's not Pink Floyd, it's just crap.
Yeah, that's basically it. Now I feel like an idiot for getting that wrong. But
no, no one's a bigger idiot than me, and I have to put myself out there in front of a video.
However, moving on from the legal side, I bought a new guitar, which...
You too, actually.
Oh, did you?
Go ahead. Go with yours. Yours is probably more interesting.
I don't know. I mean, I traded in my black Strat for a blue Strat, and it was because of your good friend Henning, who did a video demoing the new Fender Professional 2 series. And they've done one in Miami Blue, which I think I posted about previously.
Yeah, that guitar is beautiful.
It's the most ridiculous color. I mean, if I was to hold it up to the camera now, you'd both think it was light blue, and it's not. It's got like this tinge of green. It's the same as the Porsche color, Miami Blue. Mm. So the color is absolutely phenomenal. But... I have a real simple test for how good a guitar is. If I can make that ninth fret pinch harmonic easily on the Eagles Hotel California, it's a good guitar. I made it first time absolutely perfectly. I was like, this is a keeper. I am keeping this guitar.
So hold on. How do we know that's not more of a technique thing?
No. It's the guitar. 100%.
So my thought is maybe it's a technique thing, and some guitars you feel more comfortable with, therefore you can hit that harmonic.
I hope it isn't what I really think it is, which is fresh strings make it easier to make harmonics, right?
That could be as well.
But it was enough to convince me that I'd bought the one, which I've been seeking all my life. It is actually a great guitar, though. Fender have knocked these ones out of the park. It's got a push-pull coil split on it.
Mm-hmm. Not G-bender.
No benders. The coil split's really useful. Like, you know, again, using Hotel California as a great example, you can kind of play all the clean bits with the single coil bridge and then just stick it into humbucker mode when you're doing the solo, and it sounds awesome. So really happy with that one. What did you buy?
So I posted about this. Wow, I'm clipping a little bit right there. Whew, let me turn myself down a little bit. I posted on the Wampler Gear Group on Facebook, I think that's where it was, about what semi-hollow I should get.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, and the problem I run into when I do that is a lot of people will say, you should get this type of guitar because it sounds great. When I'm really looking for, what is everyone else using so I can buy something similar to that in order for me to make and test pedals. So at the end, I got my result, which is I ended up buying an Epiphone 335. And it was basically just because that was, for a semi-hollow, that's what a majority of people were using. Now, they may have wanted something else, but that's what they were using. And since my job primarily is making guitar effects that people might like, I have to make them towards, have to make them in such a way that they work with not only the Telecaster and the 7-string Schecter or whatever, it also has to work with the Epiphone semi-hollow. So anyways, that's what I bought. I bought a Tobacco Burst, I believe.
Nice.
It doesn't arrive for a few weeks though. Bought it from Sweetwater, actually.
Is it one of those new, inspired by Gibson ones? Is that what that is?
I don't know.
I played an Epiphone. I think it was a Casino, a gold top that my cousin owns. 2 years ago, I was blown away by the quality of it. I think we're a little bit snobby when it comes to brand, but they make some fantastic semi-hollow guitars, as do Ibanez, actually. Some of the Ibanez budget semi-hollows are great guitars for the money. You don't have to go blowing, a 4 to 5 figure sum just to get a really nice semi-hollow.
Yeah.
My next guitar purchase is actually probably going to be an Epiphone. I've been thinking about it since last NAMM, when I got to take a look at Emily Wolf's signature 335 Epiphone. She had it there at NAMM, and we were talking about it, and she let me play it a little bit. And it's a 335. It's just really well made. It just was a solid instrument, but it had all the things that I like. It had the diamond F holes. It was flat black, and I think she's awesome, so anything that, could help her out a little bit, I'm like, yeah, that's going to be probably one of my next guitar purchases, is her signature. I think it's dropping in January, so.
Nice.
Yeah,
I bought a Duesenberg Star Player last year. Actually, a friend bought it for me. It's a great guitar. But I was a little surprised, because I was kind of thinking all semi-hollows would have a bit of a softer tone. But it's the opposite, right? Because that resonates equals sustain equals tone, basically. So this Duesenberg is just it's one of the loudest and most raw guitars I've got, but I love it to bits. It's a great guitar, and they're a brand that probably aren't very well known, and I had to be convinced to like it, but when I played it, amazing, great guitar. So yeah, I'm a big semi-hollow fan. Look forward to seeing yours, Brian.
Well, I have to be honest. I think, Richard, you were telling me about getting some sort of tremolo on the bridge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't bring myself to it. I'm just much more of a fixed bridge type of person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I went with. So it wasn't, it's not, it's really, I wouldn't say bottom of the line, but it's, midline. So it's like, $500-ish. With the Black Friday deals, it was cheaper than that, but still, it's about a $500 range. So we'll see. I've not even played it. I have no idea. It might be a complete turd.
Well,
I have no idea.
We look forward to finding out. I mean, I tried out like a bottom end. I tried several semi-hollows last year. I tried a bottom end Ibanez versus a George Benson Ibanez, which is like £400 versus, £1,500.
Oh, that's a heavy guitar.
Okay, let me put it another way. $600 versus $1,900. Is that better?
That's a bad, I'm sorry, bad joke.
No, it was a good joke for you.
For you.
Good joke for you.
It's a good joke for you.
I've definitely heard a lot worse. And like I say, I was really impressed by the quality that Ibanez get at that price point, because there's a lot more work goes into a semi-hollow than a regular solid body.
It's totally different than like making a Telecaster or something, which is basically just a big chunk of wood with strings on it. Yeah.
What'd you call me?
A chunk of wood with strings on it.
Richard, does your Duesenberg have a tremolo on it?
It does, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's probably the finest Bigsby-style tremolo I have ever played.
I've played those before, the ones that Duesenberg makes, and they are the best.
Like, amazing.
It's that for me, and a Mastery offset-style trem. Those are the best. You can't get better than the Duesenberg and the Mastery, in my opinion.
It's just perfectly engineered. It's so easy to set up. And, you know, you just get, like with a Fender Trem or with a Floyd Rose, there's little movement before you get quite a lot of, dive bombing or whatever. With this Duesenberg Trem, you can get the subtlest of vibrato-type sounds out of it. It's absolutely brilliant. And you can string it without needing seven hands, which is a real advantage, I find.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I've never
had to put strings on one of those type of tremolos. Apparently, it's a little tedious, huh?
Really tedious. But Duesenberg fixed it with just making it a sort of through piece rather than a wraparound, and it is brilliant. So well engineered.
It feels great. It really is inspiring to play those. I really wish I had a guitar with one. I've loved it every time I've tried it.
Yeah, I just had to. I mean, I'm a big, I play with a lot of tremolo bass guitars, so I had to have one after I played that trem. It blew everything else I had out of the water. And actually, in many ways, it's a better Strat than a Strat, but it looks like a Les Paul. Great guitars. But you've got to get over the funky 20s retro styling that's everywhere, because that's their thing. But yeah.
So I've been thinking about doing a podcast that just answers, like, no stupid questions, sort of like Reddit threads, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, and maybe this is the wrong reason. So I'm a member of a lot of different groups on Facebook. In fact, that's really all I use Facebook for, as we've talked about before. It's just because there's so many gear groups. And some of them have some rather novice-type questions, you know? And I think we've talked about some of those before, where I've directly asked you, Blake, I'm like, why aren't people just Googling? Because this answer's all over the place. And I thought about just doing a podcast that's just 50 of those questions. You know, like,
we've addressed some of them before, but not in an easily Googleable form.
Right, right. I guess really, so I could just say, here, listen to this link. This answers all your silly questions.
I think that would make an awesome Christmas podcast. Brian's Christmas Ask Me Anything, as long as it's not stupid.
And if it is stupid, I'm going to completely lose my crap.
There's no such thing as stupid questions, Richard, just stupid people. Oh, wait, is that how that works?
I bring you the question, is true bypass better than buffered bypass? How do I set my EQ? Where do I set my pedal settings to achieve ABC sound? That stuff drives me crazy. Yeah, literally.
How do I sound like David Gilmour? You become David Gilmour.
Right.
You have his fingers and his guitar and his amp and all of his effects, and then you'll sound like him.
Yes. Yes. Questions like that really shouldn't go right through me. But I guess after 15 years of listening to the same questions that have been answered, I'm like, please just Google. Please just search for it.
I mean, I'm new to the scene, I guess, even though obviously I've been playing guitar since I was a young lad. And I'm getting bored of some of the same questions now. It's like, no, this doesn't sound exactly like this pedal. Brian wouldn't make it if it sounded exactly like that pedal. There is no point. There literally is none. But let's have an Ask Me Anything, Brian. It'll be a festive special. We can have like jingle bells at the beginning and everything.
We should totally do that, yeah.
That's a great idea. I'm copywriting that. Can I get paid for it?
you can blog about it.
Oh, so awesome.
That, if you do that, then you can get paid for it.
Like that. Oh, that's how that works. You have to work to get paid. Gross.
Speaking of blogging, I have to do a little segment for a JHS video this week. I gotta do
oh, really?
Today. Mm-hmm.
What's that all about?
Well, I can't tell you now.
Oh.
What?
Actually,
top secret.
I might be able to. Let's see when this comes out. I think... oh, no, they're filming Thursday, so I can't talk about it yet because this is going live next week. So, but yeah, on an upcoming JHS video, it'll be... I'm basically like phoning in some... My thoughts on some questions they're asking for a particular episode.
Very okay. Cool.
So that's vague as hell, I know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Everyone's just riveted right now, Brian. Thanks for that. That was wonderful.
Oh, you're just a man of mystery, Brian. I mean, on earth will you be talking to him about? Cycling, traveling the world.
In-N-Out Burgers.
Best type of my favorite types of effects over the past 20 years or something like that. something like that.
You know,
along those lines.
Sometimes I look around my place and I think I've got too many pedals, and then I look at his videos and I go, "Nah, I can get a few more."
Right. I'm yeah. I look at my pedal board and think I've got too many pedals, and then I think, no, Brian's got too many pedals.
I used to think that, but Josh completely blows me away. I mean, to the point that I keep talking about these groups, there'll be someone that might post, you know, a pedal that I haven't ever seen or heard about before. And it's like, oh, they only made 3 of these in 1984. And so I'll tag Josh in it. And he's like, oh, I've got one. I'm like, what? How do you have one of those? I don't even know about that. I've never heard of this pedal that was only made in Brazil for 3 days, you know?
Right. It's amazing. I don't know how he finds that stuff either, because I consider myself to be fairly plugged into all this stuff. And I know you do too, Brian. But like, still, it's like, he's like, he'll do the segment where it's like, a pedal you've never seen before. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I bet I have. And then it's like, no, I haven't actually. I've never seen that before. You're right.
But it's cool. Funny how, I mean, he and I kind of approach, I don't know, some things in the same way. Like, for example, some of my favorite pedals are actually some of the cheaper stuff. No, well, I can't say favorite. Favorite in a weird way. Favorite in that a nostalgic type of manner, I suppose. My favorite sounding pedals are obviously the ones I make, because that's why I make them, because I like the way they sound. But I mean, like, you know, like the Sound Tank series, the 5 series from Ibanez. I love that series, you know.
I have
more nostalgia.
Yeah, I have a lot of nostalgia for early Dodd pedals too, because they were the first pedals I could buy, because they were the cheapest line.
Yeah,
and
the DoD juice box.
Right, and I made the biggest mistake ever was, there's a chorus, it's $40. $50. There's a delay, it's $70. Chorus and delay sound like they might be the same thing. I'll buy the chorus. And that put me off pedals for 2 years.
They are both time-based effects. This is true.
That was my 15-year-old brain thought at the time.
You got to have a metal zone in there. Did you not get a metal zone?
I did not. I had a rat. I had a 1987 rat with the classic LM308 chip in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I lent it to someone who has become actually the drummer of a death metal band. So he obviously loved playing the guitar. and he has no idea where it is now. And I'm like, that thing that meant something to me. He's like, yeah, sorry, it's gone. So
great pedal, but I mean, not a metal zone.
No.
Have you ever actually played a metal zone?
Never.
Wow.
Send me one. You've got several.
I know what Richard's getting for Christmas. I'm writing it down right now. Richard is getting a metal zone for Christmas.
Brian, have you got to try the Wazacraft metal zone yet?
I haven't yet.
I've heard it's really, really good, but I haven't played it yet. I really want to try one.
I've heard the same thing. I've heard, but I also, again, on gear groups, I've heard that the circuit is completely different. Sounds good, but it's different circuitry entirely, which may not be a bad thing.
No, I mean, who knows?
You know, I've obviously, once again, I've not been a gigantic fan of the metal zone stuff, or I wouldn't have created modifications for it 20 years ago.
It's a preamp.
Right.
It's an EQ.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a preamp. Hell yeah.
It's definitely a preamp.
It does bring me on to something that some of our online friends have been talking about, Brian. We probably do need to go down the high gain, ultra distortion route again and bring out something that makes people's ears bleed a bit. I think that would be very, very cool.
I got some stuff coming.
I'm here for that. That's what I'm here. That's what I'm about. These are the words I needed to hear.
I know we've got one coming out relatively soon, but I want one that does that times two. Let's put it that way.
You know, the thing I struggle with, so let's look at the Pantheon, for example. It actually has a high gain setting on it.
Yep.
You know, you put that left toggle in the middle, and it's super high gain in that way. And then, you know, move that diode so they're, I think it's the middle position, I think. Either the middle or top. I forget which one will clip the most in that setting. But, you know, and it, you basically have a high gain pedal right there. The problem is that whenever you add all those options, is it an overdrive now? Is it a boost? Is it a distortion? It kind of gets murky because, well, depending on how you have the switches, it's all of it, you know? So maybe I just need to stop putting so many options on things.
Metal distortion and all that it's kind of a funny territory to get into with pedals, because if you look at people who play a lot of high gain metal, basically, oftentimes they're just using a really high gain amplifier and tightening it up with a OD1 or a Tube Screamer or something. And so people see like the Kirk Hammett, you know, Ghoul Screamer, and they're like, oh, this is going to get me that Metallica tone. They plug it in and it sounds like Stevie Ray Vaughan, and they're like, wait a minute, this isn't it. I think the marketing on the metal pedals gets people confused because they think, oh, this is what Kirk uses. This is going to be what I need. And if you don't play a high gain amplifier, it's probably not going to do that thing that you're looking for.
Wait,
I think Misha Mansour's is probably the one that's been most accurate. Like,
right. Yeah.
It actually sounds like what you think it's going to sound like.
Well, and Tosin did one too.
Oh, yeah, Tosin's too.
Tosin out, yeah.
Yep.
What was I going to say? Oh, I did the same. So I actually made that same mistake when the Yngwie Malmsteen DOD pedal came out in, what was it,
classic
97
example.
Or 98, something like that.
It's a great pedal.
It's a good pedal. It's a DOD OD250.
Yeah.
Is what it basically is. But when I bought the pedal, I was thinking this is going to be Yngwie in a box, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't.
No.
But when you stick it in front of a juicy plexi, you know, that's cranked up and already distorting, that's the tone. Like, that's just, it's a lot of gain, and it's very fluid and liquidy, you know? So, yeah, it makes sense, but that did used to confuse me until I got into the pedal game. And I'm like, I get it, because I'm not talking about Yngwie, but in certain situations, whenever you're dealing with artists, they may agree to a signature pedal, but only one that they're going to use in a certain situation. So, so here's a good example. I've been asked Brad, I just looked up and saw a picture of Brad Paisley. Yes, I have a picture of Brad Paisley on my wall. I know that's weird. Yes, that's weird. But if I made a pedal that was like the Paisley drive going through a Dr. Z amp, I don't think Brad would really, he doesn't want that. It's not something
he's
ever going to use. Doesn't need it, not going to use it. So that's not going to be a good signature product for him. He probably, I'm speaking for him, of course, probably would never agree to that. But he does use the Paisley drives, you know?
Quite a lot.
Yeah.
Have you had people... I say this rhetorically because I almost guarantee that you have, but have you had people order that and then email you and be like, this isn't really doing the Brad Paisley thing that I'm looking for?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that and the Brent Mason pedal, same thing. What's the Brent Mason settings? And I just have to explain, that's all left hand and right hand, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's all left. I mean, it really is. It's the chicken picking thing, and especially the Paisley thing as well. I mean, that's all technique. You know, you could give Brad an acoustic, and he's going to sound like Brad. Give Brent Mason an acoustic. He's going to sound like Brent. And same way with your favorite, Gilmore, you know?
Oh, you've mentioned it three times. This is awesome. I'm converting you.
I doubt you're going to give him a Paisley drive, and he's not going to sound like Brad Paisley. It ain't going to happen. Not going to happen.
And long may that be the case. I love Brad Paisley. I'm just going to put that right out there. But I love David Moore. I mean, it is really interesting. I've been watching, an artist who I've been chatting to recently. He plays for a band which is essentially a Pink Floyd spin-off, because it's the drummer of Pink Floyd, and it is Gary Kemp from Spandau Ballet, and Guy Pratt, who is the touring bass player of Pink Floyd. And I've been chatting to Lee Harris, who's the guitarist there, and he does an amazing job of copying Gilmore's early stuff. He's the guy I've been chatting to about the tube-based overdrive, Brian. Mm-hmm. And it is phenomenal to see these tribute artists, how well they get to the sound of someone that it's impossible to replicate, right? But you know, I'm totally with you. I've got a few amps. Everything sounds different depending on your amp, and people still don't get that. So fingers, guitars, amps, a lot of moving parts there. It's not just about the pedals, right? But yeah, make a really good metal pedal, please.
Working on it.
Does it gent?
Is it a gentle pedal? No.
I wanted to cover the tones of Megadeth from 1987 to 1988 exclusively. Nothing else.
Megadeth. That was the Peace Sells era, right?
Oh, you're an aficionado, Brian. I still have.
I know some Megadeth.
I have that on vinyl. I bought that when I was 12 years old. Really? That was one of my first vinyl purchases. I bought that. Halloween, Keeper of the Seven Keys, Part 1, definitely listen to that. And Anthrax, Among the Living, all in the same year. What a great year for music.
Let me hop out on my old man porch here and talk about how I recall whenever Peace Sells came out, I remember hearing, "What do you mean I don't believe in God? Talk to him every day." And as a young boy in rural Indiana, I thought, "How dare someone speak such blasphemy?" Until I got older and I realized that's not actual blasphemy.
That's a pretty good Dave Mustaine impression, actually. I think that needs to become the new ident for this podcast. You should blend that in with some nice chicken picking.
At one time I had a pretty good mullet. I really do.
I've seen the pictures.
You probably have. Yeah.
I'm not sure good can ever describe that, Brian, but it was impressive.
I had a mullet that Joe Dirt would be jealous of. And, I was trying my best shredding.
It's coming back in fashion, Brian. You should start growing that out again.
It'd be a skullet now, though. My daughter said the same thing. She said that it's coming back in.
Tell me about it. Look, it's all going. Where does it go?
It just migrates down. It goes more back hair.
Yeah. Blake will soon see that as your child gets older, the hair retreats. It really does. It's odd. How that happens.
If I look at my family, I don't think it's going to retreat from the front. I think it's going to start retreating from the back.
Oh, you get the little halo.
I get the spot. But I've already said, like, if it gets real bad, it's all going. It's like, it's just going to go. I'm just taking it down. Yeah, see, I'm already number one-ing my head anyway. It's not that far off.
I'm getting beat up from both sides. Look at this.
Yeah, me too, man. I feel it. And I normally do a number two all over. This has just grown out quite a lot because I'm lazy and I can't be bothered to shave it off. But I'm growing it long here and I'm shaving the lot off because I am losing it like every man of my age.
And the crazy thing is, I don't really notice until I'm editing video. And I'll bend down, to turn a knob. I'm like, holy crap, where'd my hair go?
I get it on my security camera. When my security camera picks me up walking past, I'm like, why is my head glowing that color?
Who is that bald guy in my head? Oh, wait, that's me.
The one thing I am noticing that's already happening is it's not happening on my head. It's happening on my face. I'm getting a lot more salt in the pepper these days. I'm like, hey, I'm only 32. That's not supposed to happen yet, but maybe it is because it's happening.
See, my facial hair is pretty blonde, so I refuse to believe that it's gray. It's actually just really, really blonde.
It's very blonde. It's very, very blonde. Always has been.
And that brings us back nicely to your new filter that you've discovered on Snapchat that gets rid of
the love doll
all
filter.
Of your issues. That's it. Air quote, swish, swish, love doll filter.
Disney princess?
It is. Okay, I will say this, though. I was pleasantly surprised whenever I put that, and I sent Richard a picture of my wife and I with that filter on. And was it him? Somebody called us Ken and Barbie. Is it you, Richard?
Yeah, guilty.
I
think what I actually said, Brian, was Ken and Barbie have changed a bit since my day.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, that's amazing.
And right. That is how I got in trouble with Amanda. So.
That's not something you want.
No. Yeah.
I mean, she's physically assaulted me, and I didn't even say anything. So, she's mean.
She'll do that to you.
I just walked up to the booth, and all of a sudden, I was getting punched. I don't understand. I probably did say something at some point. I don't know what it was, but I got punched. So
maybe she's just letting out her anger towards me on you. I don't know.
I think it's probably more likely I said something dumb on the podcast and she remembered and I forgot.
You just went up to the booth and said, what's better, buffered or true bypass, right? That's
she just punched me right in the face.
Bang.
All right, any closing comments before we wrap this up?
I've said too much.
All right.
No, I don't think I have anything. Go listen to my podcast when you get done with this because I've had some good ones lately. They've been great.
Who's been on your podcast recently?
I just had a local heroes to me. They're a band called Soft Kill, and they are – what's really cool about them, well, they're huge vintage guitar nerds, which was really fun. But we got into some really interesting stuff on the Patreon section. It's like probably one of my favorite episodes. I may put it out public like in a couple months or something, but – you know, we got real heavy into independent artists and why that's actually a better thing these mm-hmm. days, why you should stay independent. It was really interesting. But they had a big statement on that at the end of the episode, but it was a really fun chat.
I'm going to check it out, and I'm also going to listen to both The Verve and The Stone Roses because they're both great bands.
The Stone Rollers, you said? What'd you call them?
The Stone Roses. They are a band.
Okay. For a second, they said Stone Rollers. I'm like, that's not the band.
And those two. We'll listen to the Stone Rollers.
As soon as he said rollers, all I could think of is hot dogs. That's all I could think of. So now I need a hot dog.
Yeah, I don't have that. All right, let's wrap this up. Thank you for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wobblerpedals.com, and I'll personally get your email. And email Blake, email info@tonemob.com. And if you just want to make fun of Richard for his improper use of artistry there, email richard@wamplepedals.com. If you like to use, if you like to use this podcast for crap, if you like this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends, bandmates, and others into Guitar Podcast. The best way to show your support for the show is just to review it on whichever app that you get your podcast from. So what else do we want to do? Make sure to check out the Tone Mob podcast. Make sure to check out wamplepedals.com because that's, you know, how we support this podcast for the most part. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.